Hi, I'm Michael Sonnenschein, CEO of Grayscale Investments. I'm panicked about unlimited economic stimulus.
Never get boring now that we have our own music.
I know, it's very nice.
Giancarlo, thanks Giancarlo and team in San Diego for putting that together. It's fun, you know. We did this in March of last year. And Knut's already telling me I'm off 30 seconds in. So we did this, Nikita, you weren't born yet, but last March, you were just a figment in our imagination. And so what, we threw jazz music together because it was like a panic, right? And I thought, oh, that's funny. And Knut knows, I basically am a creature of habit. So I listen to like five songs or five albums or classic rock over and over in loops. And there's so many classic rock songs. But Supertramp, Crime of the Century, my favorite album of all time. Still an opera, still a little bit of just the best bands ever. I don't know who copied who, but Roger Hodgson on keyboards. And so School and Crime of the Century and Asylum from that album are great. So I was telling Giancarlo, inspired by Conan's great podcast, I was like, hey, Giancarlo, I want to have our own theme music for the podcast. It only took 150 episodes. Hey, long story short, we got a little bit of Supertramp, a little bit of jazz, a little bit of late night. And we've got our own theme, and we got riffs that Knut will use throughout the show. So it's a fun summer to have all this done. Today, it'll be mostly all summer, maybe for the rest of our lives. It's, 55-year-old man and a young woman, Nikita, who's 29 perpetually, and Knut, 59, thinking about crypto. Every day I wake up and I go, is it real? Is it not? And every day the markets tell me it's real. And today, one thing I notice again as we're in June is AMC, Nokia, BlackBerry, Virgin, like things that don't make sense to me are trending on stock twits. It's not easy to make this stuff trend when you got millions of users. It's much different than Twitter, but on stock twits, you're talking about stocks. So to see these trending after a crypto crash, after a cloud, pullback or somewhat of a bear market in cloud stocks and a SPAC implosion, and to see these NFT-like stocks trend, people are missing that. Why trade AMC when you can trade Solana or Serum? So today we're going to talk about all this. The earliest people to this trend, Grayscale. And today we have the CEO of Grayscale. His name is Michael Sonnenschein. And it really is pronounced that way because I know because we practiced it for 10 minutes just before with Michael.
Sonnenschein, yes.
And it's German descent. And Sun and Shine, which is a great name. He is San Diego boy, doing well in New York, CEO of Grayscale. I remember going by their offices and writing checks, small checks, because I'm a small investor. But small checks, Barry Silbert started DCG, and Grayscale was one of his ideas within that holding company. I remember meeting Michael. He's San Diego boy, didn't know that when I met him. And he'd go in the corner of DCG's office, and it was like a couple kids, him and Vipul and Michael. And I don't know what they were doing to get assets in.
Right.
And that's GBTC today is their big product. So we're going to learn a little bit about how this all works, get rid of some myths, talk about security, talk about crypto, talk about running one of the largest, fastest growing ETFs of all time.
Well, remember, this is the first one that I bought. The first, because in Canada, you can't really buy Bitcoin.
So you bought GBTC through your brokerage?
I did, yeah.
Through Wealthsimple or where?
No, through like BMO Investor Line.
BMO. So Michael built out the plumbing for Grayscale, and he's worked his way up. I think he maybe even an intern. We'll find out.
Wow.
And he didn't even call himself Sonnenschein. He had to change his name to be in the crypto business. His name was Michael Crypto. That was his code name. And now he gets to use his real name because he's CEO of a huge ETF family. So let's get, and Nikita, you got a bunch of questions for him.
Yes, I do.
So him and I are just going to catch up and then we'll dive in. Knut, get Michael on. Hello, Michael.
Hello.
How is you?
I am doing wonderful. Thank you guys for having me on.
Yes, you have been a friend, obviously busier than me, building a gigantic business. How big today, if you can tell me, is Grayscale? How many people, where you're at, assets, what's the biggest product in the family? Go ahead, take a few minutes.
Yeah, so I mean, Grayscale has been in the blood, sweat, and tears of my professional life for the last 8 years. Started at Grayscale as an account executive, just selling for Grayscale, helping to raise assets.
I think that's where I met you. You just called me.
Yeah.
And I forwarded you to my son, Max, which I do to a lot of advisors.
Well, somehow I got to you, Howard, and got my hooks into you.
He put down his slide. He put down his icy from 7-Eleven. He goes, "Dad, I don't understand this. Why did you pass it to me?" He screens all my financial advisor calls. So yeah, so you were interested in crypto. You just called Barry, or how did you get the job?
No, so I was on my third bulge bracket bank job. And I was finishing my MBA, and I realized I just had to do something smaller with a little bit more autonomy, a little bit more impact on whoever I was working with and for, and just stumbled into crypto. I wasn't necessarily seeking it out.
You're so young. How old are you today?
I'm 35.
So you were were you just getting fired all the time? I mean, I'm trying to do the math. Were you 11 when you started at your first book? Hey, I'm here for the Citibank job. My name's Michael Sonnenschein.
No, listen, it's been an unbelievable story. I joined Grayscale. We had one fund at the time. We had about $60 million of AUM.
Right.
And now 8 years later, I'm CEO of the company. We manage over $36 billion.
What?
And
how do you have time for this? I think I got a tall barrier that you may be the wrong guy.
And now we have 14 different investment funds. So it's just been the best ride and the most rewarding thing career-wise I could even dream up.
Wow, because I remember coming into DCG to talk to Barry. And my mistake, Barry pitched me DCG. He had started another company that I was friendly with him over. I forget the name of it now. It was so early to that space, like kind of like Cart. The hell was the name of his broker-dealer? Barry's a lawyer, I think, by trade.
No. So Barry's an investment banker by background, right? And in his first company, Second Market, where I first started working for
him. I love that company. I never invested, and I probably was okay not to invest in that, but I should have invested in Grayscale. So Barry and I were friendly through that. He was just worked so hard on that deal. Such a great entrepreneur. And Chamath was an investor in that as well back in the day.
Really?
Yeah.
Yep.
And they had a broker dealer and blah, blah, blah. And that was what Carta, they were the guys that helped. And so I used to go to Barry. I go, dude. Barry's Second Market helped me get out of LifeLock shares, which I probably shouldn't have sold either, but Howie sells early. I am the abortion child. I just leave. No, not abortion, cesarean child. I just leave parties through the upstairs window. It's an old joke. But Barry is relentless, and I would guess that's what he liked in you, because I didn't know it was 8 years at DCG.
Yeah. So Second Market was the foundation, right?
Right.
So Second Market was the private company stock trading business.
Yeah.
He had the foresight to get into Bitcoin before Bitcoin was even a thing. Wow. And it really rubbed off on the company, the employees, the board. And before you knew it, we had started this Bitcoin investment vehicle, what became Grayscale and the whole Grayscale product family, and our broker dealer trading business. He kind of said, "Hey guys, go figure out how to trade Bitcoin." And this was at a time when there was no infrastructure. You know, it was certainly not the landscape that we're going to hopefully have a chance to talk about today. So it's really been an amazing ride.
Amazing. Congrats. I never say that because I don't speak to you, but congrats.
Thank you.
And I should have been nicer. The lesson to people.
You should have invested, really, Howard.
There's so many things that seem to be
the common theme here.
The common theme is that it's a bull market and idiots like me can still get wealthy missing half the deals they see. That's what we're trying to tell people here. When a bull market, just, you know, stop bragging, first of all, Chamath and other people, because it is a bull market. And secondly, be at the plate. You're not going to bat 1,000. You may not even bat 300. That's investing. You can bat 100. In investing and just get one. See Robinhood, see LifeLock. So when I called Barry, it's like he was helping me sell LifeLock in like 2009 at Second Market. And he got a transaction done for me. And I'm like, you idiot, you could have charged me 20%. And I still think we're at that point, like where, you know, Carta's trying to do that whole thing, and I think they're way off. But I think the exchanges and crypto and tokens are going to take care of melding private and public markets. It came out of nowhere, and it's solving problems. Everybody wants it to solve, and I'll let you talk about this. Everybody wants it to be something, and it's just doing its own thing. It's kind of like this great white shark out there that's just, you can't tell it what to do. It just morphs and becomes things. So you get the job as a mechanics after you're calling people. When did you know that Grayscale could be something?
Oof. I would actually even take a step back. When did I know Bitcoin was going to be something?
Sure.
And it's really credit to Barry. I mean, you know, he and I both went to the same school undergrad, which was one of our common threads that kind of allowed us
DeVry?
To click. But
he went to DeVry?
Yeah, exactly. Did you know that? I you know, nothing against DeVry, Howard. You got to be careful.
I did that. I didn't want to out you, but I did know that. So what school was that?
We are both alumni of Emory University, Gazetta Business School, Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh, great school. Private.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when Barry and I first started talking about Bitcoin, which was during an interview, he started to talk about Bitcoin in a way that no one had ever talked honestly about anything to me before. He started using phrases like change the world and financial inclusion. And, you know, to me, impressionable, young, et cetera, at the time, you know, sitting in a bull bracket bank, looking at CNBC all day and seeing them cover Caterpillar and you know, Bank of America earnings and Delta earnings and whatever else. And to kind of see Bitcoin pop up from time to time, but never really take it seriously. And then sit down with somebody like him and really talk about the springboard to financial inclusion and changing the world and our concepts of money and value. And I mean, it was pretty hard to kind of resist.
Hmm.
You know, I had some other offers, hedge funds, family offices, and, you know, my family kind of said, you know what, Michael, like, just, you know, take a chance. And if it doesn't work out, you know, at least you'll have a good story to tell at a cocktail party or on Howard Lindzen's podcast.
Yeah, so, you've reached the pinnacle. 36 billion.
Yeah.
Pshaw. DeVry handled Howard's podcast. Finally. And what's funny is how I hooked up with you, I think even sidebars, like I'm golfing and a member guest in La Jolla Country Club. And it was probably 2016 or 2017. And my guest, who's 95 years old, is talking to me about Bitcoin because he wanted to pick my brain. And I think it was your dad and another banker were like next to me and goes, my son works at Grayscale. And I was like, whoa, that's a small world.
Yeah.
Proud father, couldn't resist.
Yeah, he chimed in. And I'm like, oh God, this is the top. And it turned out to be the bottom, basically.
Yeah.
Every day is kind of the bottom in crypto. So where are we today? Bitcoin's at, you know, basically in a 50% pullback. Is Barry and yourself and the firm, obviously you know, that's, you're talking your book, but where are we today around what it is from the original pitch to you around inclusion? I think it is inclusive. Obviously I feel volatility is a feature, not a bug. So where are we today?
I think today we find ourselves in an advanced stage of what is still a very nascent asset class and a nascent technology, but I think we're far further along. It's happened faster than we could have dreamed it happened. The crypto market today is healthier, more two-sided. We have a robust derivatives market. We have lending and borrowing. We have trading tools. We have order management systems, tax lot reporting. It is really incredible to see how far this has gone. I mean, you got to remember, Bitcoin's only been around 10 or 12 years, right? And you now have Bitcoin futures that trade alongside, you know, commodities that have been around for millennia. And this didn't even exist 10 or 12 years ago. So I would say that it has happened far faster than any of us could have even dreamed, but it is still exceedingly, exceedingly early days. No question about it.
Who's the most impressive? Obviously, Barry, yourself. You know, there's a lot of unsung heroes in this space. Jim Robinson, who's quietly bazillionaire before and bazillionaire after, one of the best investors at RE Ventures. You got to give credit to the people. You know, Chris Dixon, Fred Wilson, Andreessen, they all get this credit, but Jim Robinson quietly has caught fintech trends so early. I got him on my podcast. He's a legend.
And you know, Jim is an investor in Digital Currency Group. And,
So these are the unsung heroes that are associated with that. I'm saying I know Jim well. RE Ventures, a great fintech firm. They did Wisdom Tree back in the day. But he's always ahead of the curve. I had pitched him StockTwits and he wanted to do it way, way back. And I always love seeing Jim because he goes, I should have done it. But he was into crypto way early when no one was into it. Is he on the board? Do you see Jim once in a while?
I do. Yes. As the CEO of one of DCG subsidiaries, we do have a board that we do have to report to every once in a while. Yes. Yes.
That's why I like having a podcast. No board.
Yeah, exactly. For sure.
And so there's some stuff that we should get across to people. So DCG, the $36 billion is really kind of recent. Like, I mean, you were probably like $3, $4 billion going into 2020. So it's really been like a groundswell, right?
We were over $50 billion a few weeks ago.
Wow. But what would, like, last year you were in the single digit billions, right?
Yes.
So talk about that kind of growth, people and press and doing media. Like, what's that? Like, how many people is Grayscale again right now?
We are probably right around 40 employees today.
That's it?
And growing pretty rapidly.
So, Nikita, you had a couple questions here.
Well, I think top of the mind, the first question is that, I mean, GBTC is probably the one that we've all grown up with and as a proxy for like buying real Bitcoin. But I think one of the big things that comes up is that fees issue and that people are like, oh, it's charging me 2%. So it'll be kind of interesting. I was reading somewhere where it said that, you know, the average holding period for Bitcoin on Coinbase is only 52 days and for Ethereum is only like 43 days. So that 2% fee, that's an annual fee. So actually, no one really ends up paying that fee.
Huh.
I thought that was really interesting to kind of highlight to retail audiences who are like looking to buy GBTC.
Yeah, I use it as like training wheels. And today it's trading at a discount. So talk about how GBTC, how people use it and how you see it and want people to use it.
Sure. So, you know, GBTC is the public ticker symbol for Grayscale Bitcoin Trust. So this is our flagship product. It's our largest product and it's our longest running product. So this began in 2013 as a private placement only available to accredited investors. And we did something pretty novel, which was that we were able to obtain a public quotation for the shares that were bought in the private placement once they'd been held for a statutory holding period for 12 months. So any of those shares, you know, began to roll off into the public market starting in mid-2015. So if you can believe that, you know, GBTC now has been trading publicly for over 6 years. And
is that around the time when you guys did that 10,000 to 1 split or something like that?
That happened a little bit later.
Okay.
We did a 91-for-1 split in the stock at a certain point. Yeah. But what's so incredible about GBTC is that it has emerged not only as the first publicly traded Bitcoin investment vehicle in the world and here in the US, but it's also emerged as the world's largest Bitcoin fund. It owns and controls now 3.5% of the circulating Bitcoin supply. So, you know, roughly 20 some odd billion dollars. And it's just passive exposure to Bitcoin. There's no cash, no leverage, no trading, no, you know, rehypothecation of the underlying coins. And it's really been a fantastic on-ramp for a lot of investors into the ecosystem, whether you're an institution and you've bought the private placement, or you're a retail investor who has said, I want Bitcoin exposure, but I don't want to figure out, you know, an exchange or an order book or setting up additional accounts. You can buy GBTC right alongside Apple, Google, Netflix, any of the things you own in your brokerage account. And so for a lot of folks, that's been a really easy way to access Bitcoin. Not to mention, there's also been a lot of folks who want Bitcoin exposure, but in the form of a security so that it can go into an IRA, a Roth IRA, a 401k, et cetera, which is really hard to do with Bitcoin directly.
All good points. Plus, you don't need to know a password, which, by the way,
Correct.
If I was going to get three choices at your password, I'm going to say DeVry 123, password 456, sun and shine 897.
Yeah.
So how do you remember your password? I want a trick question at the end. How to trick, because you need passwords at that place. So
I know
how to create good passwords. So that is the point.
Yeah. Like,
I actually bought some for the kids, GBTC, in this crash. And again, who knows where it'll drop, but it was also, GBTC was trading at a discount too, to the NAV. So combined with the crash, it was the first time that I had actually have put some away.
Kathy Wood is buying it, apparently.
Oh God, that I'm out.
It's like 4%. She owns like 4% of
She buying
the
real Bitcoins or GBTC?
GBTC.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And have you met Kathy?
So Kathy, if you want to talk about connections, I cold reached out to Kathy.
You're an animal.
On Twitter. I sent her a DM in like 2015, or maybe it was even earlier. And at the time, the ARK office was half a block away from the Grayscale office in the Flatiron in New York.
Uh-huh.
And I said, I have never heard of your firm, but I came across your website and it says you invest in cryptocurrency, but I don't see any cryptocurrency holdings in what you guys manage. Are you aware of who we are? If you're not, would love to meet. And within a week, I was in Kathy's office, gave them the pitch on Bitcoin, and then ARK became the first public fund manager to invest in Bitcoin. And they did it through GBTC, through Grayscale Bitcoin Trust. And the rest is history.
So glad I got that story.
Yeah.
And is her accent fake? Because I think it's fake.
Kathy's accent? You think she has an accent?
I think so. Maybe I'm listening to the wrong YouTube channel. All right. So let me, this is what makes great people. This is why Michael's CEO. You fucking start out in bulge bracket. You get a pitch. This is the magic of the world today. You have to put yourself in position.
Yeah.
Now, anybody can get a job right now. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. And I hate to say that to smart people. Anybody can get, it's what you do with the job. Michael, that's how you use the web.
Yes.
Anybody can DM anybody.
Slide
maybe not as easy as it was
DMs.
5-6 years ago. Yeah, slide into the DM, little side boob shop for women. What do you say? Like, women know how to do it better than guys. But guys, that's just a great move. Congrats. That's why you're CEO. I mean, that's how people climb through organizations.
Yeah.
Well, it's not just that, though. But when I talked to Barry, and this was, again, the winter of 2013, he convinced me this would be the opportunity to be a part of building something, which I became quickly convinced was going to be a rare thing that I'd get career-wise.
Right.
As opposed to my experiences working for these large established banks, where you're just kind of a cog in a wheel, right? And those kind of opportunities would always be there.
Nikita, you had some more questions.
I did have some questions, yeah. I mean, it's such a cool, your story is so cool. And congrats again. So you started.
Thank you.
Yeah. And you became the CEO in January of this year. So we'd love to know, what are some of the things that you're doing in the first year as CEO?
I think, the first thing that I've been focused on is certainly building out my leadership team. I can't do it myself. And so I've made some really key strategic hires, brought on a chief operating officer, a chief people officer, chief compliance officer. The list goes on. And so kind of rounding out my leadership team. I think for me, I'm definitely focused on continuing to develop the Grayscale product suite. You know, the 14 products we have today is certainly not going to be the end of the road on our product innovation front. So working on some other things there. We are, really focused as a team on building our brand and continuing to build our brand. I think we really want to challenge the status quo of what it means to be an asset manager and are doing some really fun, exciting partnerships. We just did something with the New York Giants, which we're really excited about. And, I think continue to invest in people and technology. I mean, Howard, I think you're pretty shocked to find out that, we're just about 40 people. So we've been pretty lean and pretty mean, but, continuing to scale the business to support, our clients and the initiatives we have, continuing to grow headcount. And those are certainly all of the above, keeping us super busy.
Yeah, I did hear about that. I did read about that New York Giants story. That's really cool. And I've also heard about, some of the creative ways that you're trying to educate people. And I saw that you've been doing these ads more like movie trailers. I saw a couple. They're so cool.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
And so what about, so doing that, you have the advantage maybe, would just tell us, because of regulation, like Robin Hood gets yelled at for just saying hello in the morning. And obviously they, you know what I mean? So state of regulation in the U.S., general
the
thoughts.
The investor
on,
doesn't sound bitter or anything. Yep.
Yeah. No. I'm just saying, I think, you know, that's the game. When you're in a regulated game, you know, there's, and you're up against the big boys, that's, you don't get rich without a fight. The state of regulation in the U.S. around this, general thoughts on, and then general thoughts on potential for an ETF. We've just drummed on forever about ETF. I'm friends with Van Eck. Everybody's been trying to do an ETF. The Bonini brothers. What are the two brothers from Facebook? What are they called?
Oh, the Crypto Boys?
Yeah, what are they called again?
You're talking about the tall guys. The
Winklevosses. have an ETF. They've made more money than most in crypto. So everybody wants an ETF. Where are we at regulation in the U.S.? When do people say, hey, so, you can't be with the New York Giants, Michael?
Well, first of all, you know, to your point on, you know, regulation and advertising and all this, you know, we are, as a business, a really good example of how to operate within crypto, right? A new nascent asset class, but do so in a way that makes use of the existing regulatory framework. There's nothing about what we do today that is outside the confines of kind of what we have here around solicitation and offering investment products, et cetera. So that's a really important takeaway, I think, as an investor, that you're right, we don't have an ETF, and you're right, a lot of people have been trying to do one. But it's also important to remember that even though we don't have one, people are trading GBTC every day, people are going to all kinds of exchanges and order books. And so investors as a whole, I don't think are waiting to access this asset class for an ETF. I think an ETF will be important. I think it'll be well utilized. But I also would, you know, just want to handicap that, you know, there are certainly is going to be a subset of folks that will be, you know, excited and will use an ETF. But if it takes however long it takes, people are not going to be on the sidelines until then. No question.
No, I mean, what's sad for me is they just, SEC is tweeting and talking and we keep cutting their budget and asking for more rules. We've got enough rules. They should be hiring. They should be onboarding people. Because what happens is you get mem stocks trading instead. So it's all proxies.
Yeah.
People are trading AMC as if it's a rally in Bitcoin, right? Kids are going to get what they want. Once you put 100 million people on trading around the world on exchanges like Binance, FTX, Robinhood, eToro, GBTC, they're going to fucking play.
Yeah.
So it's just like we're so far behind.
That's literally the headline.
With the regulator, right?
I sympathize with the regulator, but I sympathize.
That's tough.
It's tough because they have no funding, and politics are playing their game, and you know, you can have a AR-15 at Walmart, but you can't have a Bitcoin ETF. And I have sympathy for the regulators because I think they're just underfunded and they're making up new rules when the old rules are fine. If you're a criminal, we will find you. Everything else should be like, hey, man, buyer beware. Like education to me is like buyer beware. And then the next education is if you fuck these people, we will find you. That's the message.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think the dynamics have changed. I mean, the last year plus with, you know, everyone in lockdown, you know, people have found their way into day trading and apps and digital currencies and meme stocks and all kinds of things. And, you know, the dynamics at play there are unlike anything we've ever seen before. And so you definitely see that there's a real need to address some of those market dynamics, payment for order flow, the rise of social media and its influence on, you know, trading, right? And this is by no means a StockTwits, you know, promotion here, but, you know, these are forums and ways that investors are connecting that we've never seen before. And it's really, really powerful and potentially overwhelming to try and tackle as a regulator.
Well, it is overwhelming. So they're deer in the headlights. Like we're literally don't need an ETF. What we need is somebody to say, behave. You better fucking educate yourself because there's tools to educate. Find yourself some mentors. And if we see you cheating and stealing, oh, you are going to be sorry. So it is what it is. People are still doing it.
You know, what you guys should take away and what I want people listening to this to remember is that here in the U.S. at least, because it is the patchwork globally when it comes to crypto. But here in the U.S., if we were having this conversation 2 or 3 years ago, Howard, I'd tell you that investors were very often coming and saying there isn't enough regulatory clarity for me to participate in this.
Institutions.
And we are no longer having... Yeah, we are no longer having those conversations.
No, you're no longer having them, but like Barron, you were understood at the beginning, this is the inclusion part. Retail had this first.
Yep.
Retail continues to lead the way. I tweeted today, or stock tweeted today, or whatever you're going to say, the trending tickers today, after a crypto crash, after fucking a SPAC crash and Chamath nonsense and all the hustles going on in tokens and wherever they happen, AMC, Nokia, Nikola, they're all trending, meaning it's the great white shark. They're lurking. They want to play, and we don't have the right products for them, so they're making them up as they go along. And so that goes to your plan about more products. So this recent volatility, I think, is great. It's going to flush out some of the leverage. It's going to flush out some of the fake coins.
100%.
So obviously you're excited about it, but it's not fun seeing assets go from 50 to 30% drawdown in assets. So how does Grayscale look at the recent volatility? Where's good, bad? Well, obviously it's good and bad, but what's your thought?
I think it's par for the course. We've seen repeat to this play, I don't know how many times. You know, there gets to a point where a bunch of leverage needs to get wiped from the system. Things get overextended and things kind of, you know, correct and form a new base and continue to build. Our investors appreciate these opportunities, you know, if fiction in this thing hasn't changed, but they can wake up the next day and buy it for 20% less than they could the day before, then as an investor, that's a pretty good value proposition, right? And so we see folks using these pullbacks, these you know, short-term price, you know, pullbacks as a way to opportunistically add to their positions.
And so, yeah, so same way that I see it. So latest addition to Grayscale Family Products, what is it? Like, what's your latest one that if you could talk about it, and how are they picked? So how do you go about that as CEO picking them?
Yeah, so maybe I'll just highlight, you know, one of the recent products we launched is the Grayscale Filecoin Trust. Have you guys looked at Filecoin and its rise and kind of utilization?
No, I had Vinny Lingam from Civic on, and I'm an investor. He's held Filecoin from the beginning, but I don't know about it. He's bullish. But so tell me about Filecoin.
Yeah. So Filecoin is one of our newer products, the Grayscale Filecoin Trust. You know, this is for us a really interesting protocol that its utility is actually looking to completely decentralize how concentrated and how centralized a lot of file storage and data storage has become in today's environment. So what am I talking about? I'm talking about the Amazon Web Services of the world and other large conglomerates where most, if not all, internet traffic and data and photos and videos and everything is stored. And when those centralized systems go down or have vulnerabilities, well, guess what happens to the internet and guess what happens to websites and all the things that we do? And so what we're starting to see now is the emergence of these new protocols like Filecoin that are actually solving for or creating efficiencies for real world issues. And the more internet users we have, the more data out there, the more storage that's out there, the more that these problems grow. And so it's been exciting to be able to offer investors the opportunity to really see how these decentralized protocols can actually play a role in improving some of these systems that, you know, clearly are not going to be able to keep up with the ever-growing demand that's out there.
Yeah, I mean, Kyle was on for Multicoin. I'm an investor there, and you've named some funds to me in the past on phone calls, but, you know, lucky enough to be there, and they were early in Helium, which was also, like, if you look at the crash, it's like bounce. It's like 10% below all-time highs after a token crash, for Christ's sake. So, you know, to me, the volatility, as I tell people, will help you define who truly is going to survive. So you need volatility to separate the wheat from the chaff or the shit from the shinola. And people look at these things wrong. They go, oh God, I took a loss. And I'm like, no, you need crashes and volatility to separate fake from real. And the time to watch what's working is after this crash. You know, the narrative's changed on Bitcoin. Elon's messed it up. But that's the markets. All's fair in love and markets. And if Bitcoin's meant to be, it's going to rally soon enough. But there's now a lot of clouds and noise over that. But the other tokens are bouncing back strong. So Filecoin's one. And so you'll do more like that, right? Looking for real solutions.
Well, it's a real interesting position for us to be in. You know, we definitely recognize our role in the ecosystem.
Yeah, because if you get it wrong, it's a headache.
Well, we want to be prudent about our choices, right? We look at where some of these protocols were developed, who they were developed by. Are they securities? Are they not? Are they pre-mined? Are they proof of work? Are they proof of stake? What's the integrity of the underlying blockchain? What's the real world use case for them? Where's price discovery for these assets? You know, these are, you know, just some of the qualitative and quantitative considerations that go into determining that. But it's also this healthy tension between where we may see opportunity and want to kind of reveal that and bring that to our investors, and kind of thinking about where investors are telling us they're interested in deploying some capital. So it's an interesting spot to be in.
And so now 40 people, say there's another Michael Sonnenschein coming up the ranks. How soon do you fire them before they come and take your job? Is that something, when do politics come into Michael starts protecting the throne? Because, you know, Nikita's already looking up jobs on
already
web
salivating
right now.
Over.
I'm already
saying worked at Social Leverage January 2021 to June 2021. She just submitted a resume to you. So
no, I already DM'd Barry.
Oh, you DM'd Barry. Good move.
So, you know, listen, I want to be clear. You know, I'm a young CEO. I'm a forward-thinking CEO. I've worked in asset management businesses. People are the bread and butter of what we do at Grayscale. And I am very much focused on culture, you know, how we treat each other, how we operate as an organization, and really trying to turn around some of the norms and stereotypes that come with working at an asset manager. And I think we're well positioned to do it.
So 40 people, so it's not like you can hire 500 people. So like, what type of people are you looking for?
I think at the end of the day, we're looking for people that are deliberate. We're looking for people that are strong communicators, people that are highly organized, high integrity, and ultimately looking for people that I think want to bring the best of their experiences working at financial services firm, because, you know, I don't want to totally poo-poo them. They do provide a really solid foundation, but we want them to bring the best of those experiences to Grayscale and kind of leave behind the things that make some of those institutions slow, tough to work at, hard to kind of break through or get promoted or take on additional responsibilities, and instead bring some of that experience to a place like us where you can actually build and shape and influence the direction we move in.
And yes, I love it. Well, if you... Well, since you're so over-allocated to crypto, your whole life is crypto. Are stocks just so boring to you now, or do you even have ETFs or stocks? Or
I think, didn't you guys recently come out with a blend like the SPY and the Bitcoin one?
That's a good idea.
So yeah, actually, no, there is a new, that's not us, but there is a new product out there that is S&P 500 exposure and a GBTC overlay, which is really interesting. But yeah, I mean, personally, Howard, I have to own some things besides crypto. I should get my brother on here, my financial advisor. You know, he does have to have me invest in things besides crypto.
Is he been bar mitzvahed yet? Is he of age?
He has
Meet Moshe, my brother. He's 11.
Exactly. No, stocks aren't boring. To answer your question directly, stocks aren't boring. And I own some stocks.
So what do you do? What's exciting to you in the space in crypto for you with your personal money? What excites you? Not recommendation, well, but what excites you?
Yeah, no recommendation, but, you know, I will be very honest. You know, I still buy assets like Bitcoin 365 days a year. You know, I you know, don't believe that I, despite where I sit within this ecosystem, I'm not going to be the right person to pick spots and determine when's the time to buy and when's not. And so I buy a little bit more of a lot of different protocols on a daily basis. And it allows me to just continue to grow my crypto portfolio and keeps me engaged with the ecosystem.
Great. Nikita, any other question? I want to let him go. Is there anything we miss, Mike, that you want to talk about?
No, it's just good, fun banter. I love this.
Who else in crypto right now, besides it may be too early for you, is there any other protocols that are super interesting to you personally, do you think are important, like to succeed?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm very excited to see what's happening in the broadly defined DeFi space. I think it's a little early to see whether or not DeFi as a whole is going to have full staying power, and whether or not there's certain protocols within it that do. And it comes back to the same, you know, calculus that every investor needs to do, particularly around crypto, right? Because the barriers to launching a cryptocurrency or a protocol are pretty low these days. You really got to do your homework and determine, in my opinion, whether or not something is solving for some real world issue, some real world efficiency or savings versus somebody launching something that is, you know, just kind of a solution in search of a problem. And if you can kind of hone in on that, you know, it can really help you kind of navigate where to and where not to deploy capital.
Okay. Well, that's great. I mean, like you, scouring for ideas, I think, how do you keep up on, is there any like source that you go to for you to keep up on, like newsletters or people?
I follow Howard Lindzen on Twitter.
Yeah. But that puts you ahead of most, but not good enough to be CEO. So who, and you do follow me on Twitter, but who in crypto is a legend to you and you just, like an oracle at some level? Is Barry active?
Yeah, Barry's active. I mean, I think, you know, crypto Twitter can be all consuming.
Yeah.
You know, and so you got to kind of curate it for yourself over time. You know, I think there's no shortage of, you know, good media out there that's covering crypto, whether it's CoinDesk or, you know, even just, you know, the broad traditional financial media. So there's, you know, enough sources out there that it's pretty easy to stay up on kind of what's happening in the space, but it does move quickly.
All right. Well, you're the man. It's a great story.
You're the man.
I am the man. I'm the old man, the man in the prostate. And so your family, everybody's good in San Diego?
Everybody is good, thank you.
Long year. People are coming out, and it'll be a great summer. I think we'll have a few scares in the fall because the country's big and no one's listening to anybody. But keep cranking. We'll get you back here kind of quarterly to catch up on Grayscale.
I would love that.
Yeah. I love doing that.
The tone. It feels almost Howard Stern-esque. I really like it.
I'm getting better at listening. The podcast started.
When you don't know how to shut up, it's hard to listen. So
yeah, exactly. So we are getting better at it. For me, it just helps me because to have longer conversations is good. It kills two birds with one stone. You know, I've called you sometimes that who's, you know, looking for funds that for myself.
Totally.
And those aren't for everybody because not everybody's accredited. So to get you on here and chat about just the overall industry is great, especially after kind of the crypto weekend crash, which is just, to me, opportunity. And you're saying the same thing. It's never fun to have the tide wash out. I think is so interesting about crypto is how fast it happens. The U.S. is like, you know what's happening and everybody's going to stand in the way and the Fed, someone's going to come on TV and calm everybody down. Whereas crypto is like Sunday, deal with it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, 100%.
Get your game on, get your man pants on or your girl pants or whatever you're going to do. But like, yes. There's nobody going to like time out. Right.
I've been through it so many times, Howard.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I literally don't even flinch when I see crypto down 20%. I'm like, great, blood in the streets. Let's start buying things.
Yeah. And this was real blood because, you know, every kid's wired, including my daughter, like what's so funny about this because of StockTwits and Telegram and Signal and Robinhood and Coinbase, every kid's got the same alert set and you could see 10%. Yeah. And so people were buying the down 10%. Mm-hmm. And as soon as all those got taken out this time, all the kids looked at each other and go, is that supposed to happen? You know? And so now a wider range of alerts is set. You know, even my daughter who had been doing great was like, whoa, she came to me on a Sunday and I said, that signal finally that you're nervous. And that means your friends are even more nervous than you. And we bought them kind of on a Sunday so far. Is it the final bottom? I don't know. But like Uniswap doubled. A lot of things have doubled. Off the bottom. So the new leadership will emerge. People need to learn to embrace this stuff and just read a little bit every day. But thanks for contributing. Good on you to get this trend really early.
Thank you,
Bud. And we'll see you soon in New York, hopefully.
Awesome. I love it. Have a great holiday weekend, guys. Take care.
See you.
Bye.
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 Yeah, Howard Stern. That was an uncalled for plug by someone with $36 billion asset management company, huh?
I think he's right. You got to share the first name and a lot of the same humor.
I know. Yes. He's just so, but his voice is so good. He wanted to be in radio. I'm only in it because of the pandemic.
He's just juvenile and dirty all the time.
I don't think so. Now he's into the interview.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Right? Like he's into the interview and get whatever guest he wants. I'm not a listener because I'm just podcast guy. I don't even know. I have Siri. I'm serious. Like, are you serious? Like, why isn't it just howardstern.com? That bothers me.
Right.
Anyways, this is, did you enjoy that, Nikita?
I did. It was a very sun and shining conversation.
In Canute? Absolutely. Interesting, right? So young, 35.
I know.
No.
Fantastic.
Yeah, fantastic. He was 27, turned his life into a monstrosity of success.
Some people do good, like when the quarter life crisis hit.
Quarter life, meaning he was 25, 26. Yeah,
around that time.
He timed it beautifully, and kudos. Those are great success stories, both for Barry, who came out of the second market deal to found this, and to Jim Robinson, who's a great investor in fintech, just a great guy at RRE in New York. And there's just some people aren't in the headlines every day, but knocking it dead.
For
sure. And that's kind of what we do. And you got to find those people. They're all on Twitter. Kathy was on Twitter in 2015. No one wanted to give her the time of day.
No.
I thought she's English. Is it a fake? Did I miss that? Is she American?
I think so.
Huh.
Yeah.
All right. So this is Panic with Friends. Nikita, Knut, and I get together once a week. Sometimes when we're traveling, we'll do 20 in a week. You just don't know that. Oh, I just told you that. And we talk about investing trends, talk to founders, traders, investors, entrepreneurs, venture capitalists, try and get a little bit ahead of the curve. If he'd come on the show in his first year at Greystone, you would have said, Howard, why are you wasting our time? But, you know, you have to keep an open mind in this business, and the business is changing faster than ever. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your favorite podcast app. Search my name, Panic with Friends, or Stock Twits. Thanks, Stock Twits. Thanks, Knut and Nikita. See you, everybody.
Howard Lindzen is the founder and general partner at Social Leverage. All opinions expressed by Howard and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Social Leverage or Stock Twits. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for decisions. Guests may maintain positions and securities discussed in this podcast.